Hi, I'm Adam Walker, a physiotherapist.
And I'm Francois Tudor, an orthopaedic surgeon. And this is Cut and Run.
Our podcast to help you recover from injury and return to sport.
Hi guys, welcome back. So today Adam and myself are going to talk about the return to sports phase following ACL reconstruction. So in effect, the patient has completed their late phase rehab. And so usually it's around 9 to 12 months following their surgery, and we're looking at a return to phase, return to sport. So Adam, when you get to this stage, what are you thinking? What are you doing from here?
Yeah, this is a really important phase, and often when people pass a return to sport kind of assessment, they think a lot of the work is done, but unfortunately there's still a little bit of work to do. So the main things for this phase is identifying and addressing any ongoing deficits, because usually people aren't perfect by this stage, so there may be things that you really have to focus on so that you're really setting yourself up for minimizing the risk of further problems as much as possible. And then the second thing is what that transition back into sport actually is going to look like.
So exactly how do you go about doing that then?
Yeah, it's a really good question, and it's something that I think is undervalued. So basically we're looking at going from a process of restricted training, so having limitations in what you can and cannot do at training, through making a gradual transition to full unrestricted sport. So for example, often we start with non-reactive training. So this is usually skills-based training, drills that just involve running in pre-planned routes and performing your sports-based skills, just to get you reintroduced to the sporting environment. And then from there, what we're looking at doing is introducing some more reactive elements. So that means you might be doing things that are one-on-one, where you're reacting and responding to a player, an opposition, or the path of the ball in front of you, which then adds that level of complexity for your body to interpret the information around them and then respond to that, which you can, as you get exposed to more of that, then your body gets more comfortable responding to more unpredictable situations. Now, this is really important because most ACL injuries happen during a reactive type situation. So by planning your reintroduction to these more open drills or reactive drills, then you're providing your body with as much stimulus as possible to be prepared for that when you do make a return to sport. Then the next stage is making a return to contact, which is obviously only relevant if you're in contact-based sports like AFL and rugby and those kind of things. But it's important that you're thinking about how you're going to do that. For example, that may look like starting with just some wrestling or tackling on your knees, and then one-on-one you're taking the other person to the ground, they're taking you to the ground, and then you're building that up into more random and unpredictable scenarios like you would encounter within a game.
And I guess that's even in supposed non-contact sports like soccer and basketball, you've still got to be doing those parts of the game where there is some form of physical element to it, where you are going to be less in control of the dynamic process, I guess.
Absolutely. It just looks different for those sports. So for basketball, really common for people when they go up for layups or shots that they're not getting tackled, that they just get some indirect contact and they get bumped while they're in the air, which throws them off balance, and it's the landing mechanism that then can cause the injury. So by practicing drills involving those kind of scenarios and getting contact, even if it's just little bits of contact, you can help familiarize yourself with and overcome some of the fear associated with those kind of positions. The same thing with soccer, with another classical mechanism is heading the ball, so heading and getting some contact while you're in the air, or even pressing injuries where a defensive person is pressing up onto you, and it's during those tackling motions that you can get some contact, even though it isn't as significant as AFL or rugby. Those kind of smaller contact in types of situations are extremely relevant and important to consider.
Yeah, I mean, let's face it, soccer isn't really a contact sport. It's is it at all?
No, it's all those palms rolling around on the ground when they've just been little nudge in the shin.
It's the Spanish and Italians who do that, mate, and the Argentinians.
Okay. I'm mistaken. Okay.
And so in training, like, I guess there are things that the team and the coach can do to make sure that the other players are aware, because, you know, a lot of the further injuries can happen when someone forgets that you're injured. So you know you're injured and you're going to look after yourself and stay within your boundaries. But, you know, other people can forget that. So, you know, from what I've seen, wearing a different colored jersey or wearing a bib or something else that really highlights that you are non-contact is quite important, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a classical one of where people are wearing a different coloured bib or even a different coloured hat just to remind people around them that what's going on. You have to be really understand what you can and cannot do at the point of your rehab and really take control of recognising what drills you need to pull yourself out of, rather than leaving it up to either the coaches or the players around you, because obviously they've got a lot of things to focus on. So you need to be able to be clear on what you should and shouldn't be doing and then pull yourself out at the appropriate time.
Yeah. Okay, so we've got back into some contact and we've built back into that restricted to unrestricted contact training. Where do we go from there?
Now you're basically back at unrestricted training. So you're performing training as if you were not injured. So what we're really looking for is performing a good training block, usually of at least 4 weeks, but hopefully up to 6 weeks, where you're just doing essentially like a mini pre-season, where you're really getting used to being around the team, exposing to your sport, and getting just some reps under your belt of being back involved with your sport, so that way, when it is time to play the games, you're getting a lot more comfortable.
Okay. And for me, my belief, and I think you feel the same, is that during that phase, you're still doing the strength and control work that effectively, and the dynamic stuff that is effectively the injury prevention program that people do before, you know, to try and prevent injuries. You're doing that on both legs so that you're hopefully going to minimize the risk of a further injury as well.
Yeah, correct. Just as we've talked about in the past. Now, as you continue to play sport, it's going to be compulsory that you perform some kind of injury prevention exercises. So you may have a formal strength and conditioning program that you're doing, or one of the established programs that we've talked about. And then on top of that, other exercises which you're doing to try and address the deficits that you still might have remaining in that leg to make sure you're ticking all the boxes.
Yeah. And then I guess once you've completed that training block, you're going to progress things, and how do you go about that, and how do you minimize the risk of injuring your hamstring or your calf muscle? Because that's quite common to see, as you don't manage your load very well, or you go back a bit too much and you injure something else just going back too eagerly.
Yeah, one of the biggest risk factors for a lot of injuries is a spike in workload. So by going through this process, you're also going through a process of gradually increasing how much work you're exposing yourself to while you continue to perform some strength and conditioning, so that you're conditioning your body for the demands of sport. I mean, hamstring injuries are definitely a common one, particularly after ACL if they've used a hamstring graft. So what we're looking for is minimizing the chance of a spike in workload, so that can cause this undue fatigue that can flow on from one session to the next and then put you at risk of potentially some other injuries. So if we can get that right, that goes a long way to minimizing some of the other injuries associated that you might kind of get.
Okay. And so we've finished our training block and our return to sport phase. And then how do you ease your way back into sport?
Yeah, there's a few ways there that are really critical. As just like with lots of the professional athletes, they'll often come back in a lower division, because a lower division, you feel like you feel like you've got a little bit more time to respond to situations around you. You can start to work back into games and be comfortable. The second thing
is less pressure to win or lose, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. So you can work yourself back in that way. The second way is playing reduced minutes. So, for example, in a soccer match, obviously might go for 90 minutes. Maybe you only start with playing 45 minutes of the game, just to, so that you're staying fresh throughout the game and you're starting to build some confidence in your leg. The third way, which is often not used but really important is that most ACLs actually happen in the first periods of games, because that's when the intensity of the game is the absolute highest and it's a little bit more frenetic and a higher tempo, and there can be a lot going on during those periods. So you're coming from just general warm-ups of the game into something that's really high intensity, and that puts you at a high risk. So coming off the bench or when the other players are already under a little bit of fatigue, the game has settled down a bit, it's settled down into its little bit of a flow, and you can come into the game and make a bit more of an impact and be more confident and reduce some of the risk in that perspective as well. So once you go through that period, maybe that might take 4 weeks or so for you to slowly build up your minutes, then start on for the game and then move up into the higher divisions, and before you finally made your big return to full unrestricted sport.
Okay. And then there's increasing research and evidence that the mental aspect of return to play is absolutely vital, and the players who are or feel that they're ready for it are less likely to, you know, injure themselves again and more likely to achieve a return to their level of sport that they were at before. What do you know about that, and what, you know, should people try to do with regards to that mental aspect of returning to sport?
Fear of re-injury has been shown to be have the strongest correlation between those who return to sport and those who don't. So it's just a massive factor. But we hope that this is something that you've been trying to address for the last many months. So from the late stage of rehab, you should be exposing yourself to situations that are gradually more reminiscent of your sport. You've gone through the return to training process. So by the time you actually get back to playing sport, although there'll be some apprehension there because it is new, you should be feeling thoroughly confident that your knee is going to handle the demands, and you've addressed all those factors as you go. Because we don't want you to get to going back to return to sport and say, geez, I'm still really fearful of this, I'm still really fearful of these situations. We want those to come up in the rehab prior to that, so that you can be exposed to those situations and you go into sport really feeling good about yourself.
Yeah, and finally, we've spoken about it before, but when do you find that people get to that phase, we call it the forgotten knee as surgeons, where they really stop worrying about their knee or remembering it's a problem or it has been a problem?
Yeah, often it's the second season. So they get through their first season, go, oh yeah, I got through that, that went well. They can get into another pre-season, get a bit more training under their belt, and then they go into the second season often feeling a lot better.
Okay. Well, thanks so much for that. That was really interesting. Any take-home points that you want to summarise?
I think the three main take-home points were, one, keep up your training and keep addressing any deficits that you still have. Two, go through a structured return to training process that can often go for as much as 2 or even 3 months. And then finally, complete a return to sport process where you're transitioning from a period of restricted minutes in lower divisions to full unrestricted sport.
Thanks so much. Thanks for listening. If you have any questions, then please send us an email. If you have any topics you'd like to cover, also drop us a line at cutandrunpodcast@gmail.com. See you next time.